In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the teraphim. Each had six wings. With two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one called to another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, and the whole earth is full of his glory. And the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, Behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and whom will go for us? Then I said, Here I am, send me. And he said, Go, and say to this people, Keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the hearts of this people dull, and their ears heavy, and blind their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed. Then I said, How long, O Lord? And he said, Until the cities lie waste without inhabitant, and the houses without people, and the land is a desolate waste. And the Lord removed people far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. And though a tenth remain in it, it will be burned again, like a terebinth or an oak, whose stump remains when it is felled. The holy seed is its stump. And I want to start by asking a question, is just to ponder for a moment, what is it like to meet with God? What is it like to meet with God? One day, everyone will meet him. So will you meet him as a friend or an enemy? People claim to know God. Often you find that when people say, I know God, and you ask him about God and what he thinks, he tends to agree with them a lot. Their God is like them, which makes you wonder if they perhaps made up their idea of God. How do you know you've met with the real God? What happens if you meet God? This is what happens. You see him, if you meet God, you see him as truly and terrifyingly awesome. And if you meet God in a way that is truly and terrifyingly awesome, then there are three things that happen to you. You become convicted, you become cleansed, and you are commissioned. You are convicted in that you become aware of his holiness and your sin, and you confess that you are cleansed, your sin is wiped clean, and you're commissioned, you're given a job to do. And in the reading, just from a moment ago, that is what happens to Isaiah. Now, Isaiah is different to us in a number of ways, but we see what happens to him when he met God. So Isaiah, first we have Isaiah's awesome vision in verses 1 to 4. It starts, in the year King Uzziah died, which means we can place this in history, about 740 BC, 740 years before Jesus was born. Uzziah was a king at a time when the nation had a great peace, prosperity, and the religion looked pretty good as well. But as we've been going through Isaiah already, we've seen that as perhaps superficial, that they're going through the motions, it's not in the heart, but it looked good. But Uzziah has now died. And that's always an unsettling time when a key leader dies. If you think back a few years ago when Nelson Mandela died, lots of South Africans were anxious because he was a leader through a time of a lot of change. And he brought about some stability. Then he died. And there's questions about the future direction of the country. That's the kind of thing that happened when Uzziah died. So when the king died, Isaiah has a vision and he sees the king, the Lord, on his throne. So all the anxiety that Isaiah, like others, may have felt, he sees this king. He sees the one that's actually in control. And Isaiah gives us a flavor of the awesomeness he experiences. It says he was high and lifted up, and that the train or the hem filled the temple. So this is just the edge of God's robe. Just the edge fills the temple. You get an idea of the scale of meeting with God. Isaiah is overwhelmed by just the edge of his garment. And then verse 2, the seraphim, an im in Hebrew just means plural. So this is the plural of seraph. And seraph means the flaming one. So the flaming one. So these mysterious creatures who are like burning in flames are themselves just, they are in awe of God. So they fly above the Lord's throne, and it says their wings cover their face, their feet, and they fly with them. So covering their face, this similar sort of things happen in other parts of the Old Testament. The covering their face means that they, despite the fact they are glorious ones, they cannot look on God's glory. And their feet is something to do with they don't choose the direction they go in. And of course they fly. And what is the job of these glorious flaming creatures? Their job in verse 3 is one called to another saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." Their job is to praise God, is to proclaim his character to each other. And they say he is holy. What is God like? He's holy. Now that means that the sort of root of the word, we kind of in English have religious words, the history of the word is about separateness, otherness, that God is other. And they say holy, holy, holy. Now there are far fewer words in Hebrew than in English or any of the other languages that some of you have as a first language. There are fewer words. There is a word that means very, but often they would say, they would repeat a word, and up to three. So there's an example people use of a conversation that happens in the Bible about a pit. And what kind of pit is it? It's a pit. Oof, that is a pit and a half. It's a very pity pit. It's a deep pit. So when you say he's holy, you can say he's very holy, or you can say he's holy, holy. But God is holy, holy, holy. He's the essence of otherness, it means. And Isaiah's experience is physical as well. In verse 4, it says that there's an earthquake and smoke filling the temple. Now, we know at the time of Uzziah, there was an earthquake. And Isaiah often draws on that. And he's saying, when you meet God, it's like that. In his presence, it's so commanding that everything shakes, and there's smoke filling the room. And the book of Exodus, God guides through a cloud, and when the first time he comes to the temple's filled with smoke, and you put the two together, smoking and shaking. We think of the Ten Commandments, and what we put it all together. What you've got here is a vision of God turning up, and it is awesome. It is terrifying. It's amazing. Now, we are very privileged to have the English language. It's got so many words. Apparently, if you think of words like people in the world, English is like the population of China. We've got all these words, and then we don't use them properly. So there's an advert for awesome pizza. Now, I think what they mean is it's really good. It's not awesome. You don't eat pizza, and the dining room shakes, and it fills with smoke, and you're brought to tears. If it is, tell me where to find it. But that's not awesome. That's very good. When you meet God, it is awesome, awful in the true sense, that Isaiah is overwhelmed. Now, we need to use our imagination in some way on a grand scale. But then, even then, Isaiah is only talking about seeing the hem of his garment. And words start to fail him and us, but we get the gist of what he's talking about. And in verse 5, we see that Isaiah is fearful of the event. This is God. This is God. Now, Isaiah's experience, in one sense, is unique. He's a unique person for a number of reasons. But We don't see God like this, literally. We don't, at the call to worship, the room shakes and the room fills with smoke. This side of the last day. And yet it does. We do see it by faith. And when we come to John chapter 12, John draws us to this chapter and another one in Isaiah, and he says that what Isaiah sees here, when he sees God in his glory, what does he see? He sees Jesus. Isaiah is seeing Jesus. So it's amazing that Isaiah sees something of God and his glory, just a glimpse, just a hem. He's blown away by it. But we know that he's seeing Jesus, 740 years before he was born as a man. Jesus appears in his ministry as normal. To meet him momentarily, it would be nothing remarkable. And yet we're told he's the glory of God. And that was missed by most then and now. But it's seen by faith. And when we see that by faith, our minds are just blown away. I think that's something that's missing for most of us and in the modern church and probably all of us. We often think, well, God is my friend. Well, that's true. We often think, well, I want to, you know, I want to understand a bit more in the sermon and the Bible study. Well, that's true and that matters. But there is awe. There's a point to which this goes beyond what you understand. That God is other. He is holy. In fact, he's holy, holy, holy. And we need to grasp that. Now, how do you know you meet with God and his glory in Jesus Christ? How do you know that that's happened to you? Well, what happens next? What happens to Isaiah? Those three C's happen to Isaiah. He's convicted, cleansed, and commissioned. So he's convicted. Isaiah's first reaction is not, cool, God's my mate and chummy. He is terrified. Why? Well, verse 5, his first reaction is, woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. When he meets God, who is holy times three, he realizes who he is, who Isaiah is. It becomes more clear, because God is holy, he's the essence of holiness, and Isaiah is not. And so he becomes aware of his sin. Look at what he says. He says, I am of unclean lips, of people of unclean lips. And now my eyes have seen the King, the Lord. Now, in the Old Testament, they believed that if they were to see God, they would die because he is holy and they have sin and the two can't live together. They would die if they were to actually see God. And so when he says a man of unclean lips, he's saying this is something personal, something about me, something moral. So what we sometimes see in the Bible is the idea that things are in your heart, deep down, but they kind of well up. And where do they come out? They come out of your mouth. Your mouth gives you away. The mouth exposes what you're actually like. You know when people say hurtful things and then they say, I didn't mean it. Actually, they did. It was just there all along. And then it's just popped out. Also means he can't join the seraphs in their praise because his lips are unclean. And he says, a people of unclean lips. He doesn't go, I'm not like them. No, he says, the culture I'm in is like it, and I'm just like them. He identifies with them. So sin is not just things that we think that are really bad. Sin is acting and thinking and speaking against God's will. Sin is me deciding a course of action. And if it fits in with God, well, lucky old God. You see, suddenly Isaiah is aware. Now, I think probably most of us go, well, yeah, I know theoretically I'm sinful, but we don't think we're that bad. But when we see who God is, what God is actually like, we become acutely aware of what we're like. So here, Isaiah is, he probably knew about sin, but he's now convicted at a level he'd not been convicted of before. And so when you meet God, you're convicted and you confess your need is exposed. Again, think of, we know he's meeting with Jesus here. Think of Peter. He'd known Jesus for a while. He knew there was something special about him. But after that miraculous catch of fish, what does he say to Jesus? He doesn't say, wow, you can come fishing with us any day. He says, get away from me. He tells Jesus to go away from him because he says, I'm sinful. When Peter saw Jesus' glory, he was seeing the same Jesus, the same Jesus he'd seen, though he'd always been in front of him, but by faith he's seen something he'd missed before, and he becomes deeply aware of his own sin. So when you meet with God and you see who he actually is, you become aware of who you are. In fact, some people have said you don't really know who you are until you meet with God. You become convicted of who you are, and it's not always pleasant. It's never pleasant to realize what's actually there in your core. But God doesn't leave you there. The next bit is that he's cleansed in verses 6 to 7. Isaiah is not left in sin, and Jesus will not leave you in sin. Isaiah is cleansed. So in verse 6, the seraph goes to the altar, takes the burning coal, and verse 7, puts it on Isaiah's lips and says, your sin is atoned for. And you'd be right to think, that's a bit weird. So the altar is the place of sacrifice, of offering. It's how sin is dealt with. An animal was placed there and burnt up to God in the place of the sinner. So the sinner deserves to be burnt up before God, but an animal goes in its place. And of course that points us to the cross, which happened just a short distance away from the altar. Jesus is the sacrifice. He dies in our place for our sin. And then the coal is taken and applied to Isaiah's lips. The point is he confesses, and as he confesses, what he confesses is atoned for. He's saying, my lips are what gives me away. And it's his lips that are, his words that are atoned for. His sin is forgiven. That's exactly what we see in the Gospels, isn't it? That Jesus goes to sinners in their sin. He doesn't wait for them to sort it out. He goes to where they are. But he doesn't leave them. He forgives them and changes them. Jesus takes us as we are, but he doesn't leave us as we are. There's sort of two extremes the church falls into. One is a sort of moralistic extreme, where it's kind of like, you're a sinner, get it right, and come to Jesus. And the other one is saying, no, we're open, we're inclusive. Jesus takes anyone. And they're both wrong. Because Jesus does take anyone. But then he forgives them and he changes them. He cleanses them. When Isaiah sees God, he says, I am lost or I am ruined. And now he's found and restored. And this is the good news, isn't it? That nobody is too far or beyond. We have to be convicted that we are in that need, that everyone is in that need, and we don't sort of minimize that. But the good news is that no one is beyond what Jesus can deal with. But is it just that? Is it just that we're forgiven? Well, the next thing in verses 8 to 13 is he's commissioned. Isaiah sees God and he hears God and he's convicted and he confesses and he's cleansed, but he's not just accepted, forgiven, he's also changed. He's got a job to do. Verse 8, God says, who shall I send? And Isaiah, who can now speak to him, says, with his cleansed lips, he says, send me. And Isaiah has a distinct mission. His job is in 740 BC, and his job as a prophet is to go to Judah and tell them that their worship is hollow. It looks okay, but actually it's hollow, that they've been trusting man and not God, and we've been looking at a few chapters already in Isaiah about this, and that Isaiah will tell them that Judah is going to go off in judgment to exile. That's his job. A foreign power is going to come over and take them away from the promised land. And that's what the rest of the book is about. But here's the surprise in verses 9 to 10. I'll read you verse 9. This is what God tells him to say. He says, go and say to this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. And as you read through Isaiah, and he comes up in a couple of other books, the history books of the Bible as well, we see that Isaiah's message is clear, but he's mocked for it. He's mocked for his clarity. And he's mocked for repeating things. You may have heard the story before of the church that complains to their minister because he keeps on delivering the same sermon. Can we have a different sermon next week? And he said, once you start doing what I said in the last one. God speaks to Isaiah and he gives him a job. And he says, I want you, Isaiah, I want you to preach. I want you to warn people of what's going to happen if they don't change. and they're all going to ignore you. They'll hear, but they'll not understand. They'll see, but they'll not see. They'll not get it. They'll be deaf and blind to the message. And the more you preach it to them, the more they'll become like it. They will reject it and not be healed. And Isaiah in verse 11 says, well, how long, O Lord? How long will I do this? And the answer is until it happens in verses 11 to 13. So fields and cities are laid waste. Verse 12, the Lord removes people far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. Literally, they will become God forsaken. It's a very hard mission, commission to Isaiah. And I bet now he wished he hadn't volunteered. But verse 9 there that I read is quoted in all four Gospels about Jesus' parables. That they were rejected. That some people heard his parables and go, I can't quite understand it, but I want to hear more. But largely, Jesus' ministry was rejected. And God's call today, who will go? Those who reply, send me, are largely rejected. The same passage Jesus says after each time he quotes this, he says, he who has ears, let him hear. You've got ears? Listen. People will listen, but some will ignore. Jesus is warning, listen, don't ignore. And I think this has got significance for everyone here, wherever you happen to be at, for a non-Christian, for a Christian, for someone who's not quite sure what they are. This is an important message. To the Christian, to regular CPC person, is don't be discouraged. Now, we love it when we preach and the church grows. When there's a meeting we put on and the gospel's preached and someone, maybe a number of people, come to faith. When a church member chats to one of their friends about their faith and they say, can I come to church? Can I do that Christianity Explored course or whatever it is? We love that. We love it when we say, oh, it's because the faithfulness of the gospel, that's why it happened. But a negative response is not wrong either. That actually faithfulness to the gospel is what matters, because both responses, we're told, are in God's hands, because it's supernatural. It's supernatural that, why would anyone believe this message? It's supernatural when what we want happens, and it's supernatural when it doesn't. So don't be discouraged. To the non-Christian, those considering Christ and his claims, listen to Jesus' words. You've got ears, listen. You've got eyes, have a look. Don't dismiss the message that you heard from a Christian friend or here or wherever. Heed the warning. Because just as Isaiah's warning to Judah that they're going to go into exile, so there's a warning that Jesus gives to the world, that we will be exiled from God. That's the story of the whole Bible, actually, is that excluding from God's presence for sin, ultimately, in hell. Or be restored back to him by Jesus through the cross and the resurrection, as he gives us new life. And this passage here ends with hope at the end of verse 13. It sounded pretty grim, and just the last line gives us this massive hope. So the image is like all of what's going on to Israel and Judah. It's like a forest that's been cut down, and then once it's been cut down, it's then burned. There's nothing left, just a stump, but we're told the holy seed is that stump. So it gets called a holy seed, a stump, a root, and that, as Isaiah carries on through this message, we find that that root is the Messiah, is the Christ. It's Jesus. So just as Isaiah's sin is not the end for him, he's restored, so Judah being cut down and exiled is not the end for them. That this seed and stump around which a new Israel is going to grow, around the Christ, around Jesus Christ. So just as exile was a threat for Judah, so it is for us. But Jesus takes that exile. He takes that exile from life. He takes death and hell onto himself in our place. And then here's the seed and the stump and the root around a new people will gather around him. The new Israel, the universal church that we're part of. So will you be a part of that gathering around him? There's a choice that you face of either bear your sin on yourself and be excluded, or by faith in Jesus, have that swap so he bears it for you and you're included. So as we started, how do you know you've met with God? What is it like to meet with God? Well, he won't always agree with you. He's your friend, but it's not chummy with God, because this is the God that Isaiah talked about when the room shook and filled with smoke. What is it? How do you know you've met with God? Well, rather, meeting with him is you are awestruck, you are shaken to the core. You're aware of your sin and convicted deeply of it, but you can confess it. And then Jesus cleanses you and commissions you and gives you a job to do. Let's pray. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is filled with his glory. Oh God, we ask that you would, by your Spirit, open our eyes to see this glory that we find in Jesus Christ, that we would see you as you really are, that we really would be awestruck by you, that you would convict us of our need for you, but also we'd know of your cleansing and your commissioning, that we'd be sent out to do your work. We ask in Jesus' name and for his glory. Amen.